This is Your Life, Season 1, Episode 3. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cachette, and I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting here at a table with Michael Hyatt. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. How are you
doing?
Good
to see you again.
Thank you.
Although I feel like I see you all the time.
I know.
It's so nice working
often
together.
Often enough from your perspective, I'm sure.
Plenty. Oh, no, I'm not supposed to say that. You know, if we polled our listeners today and asked them why they do what they do, you know, our listeners, as you know better than me, they're leaders, entrepreneurs, business people, people with a platform, something to say, some kind of message. If we polled them right now and asked them why they were doing what they're doing, why they're so invested, I would venture to say that almost all of them, if not all of them, would say it's because they want to make some kind of impact.
Totally.
Right? They want to use the life that they've been given for some kind of positive difference or positive good.
Yeah.
But what happens is it doesn't always work out like we dream, right?
Right. Totally.
And every now and then, and sometimes more often than we'd like, we wake up and what we had hoped to accomplish doesn't happen. And we find ourselves in a place we never imagined we would be in, doing what we never imagined we'd be doing. And somehow what we shot for, what we aimed for and hoped for, and where we are two completely different places.
Yeah, it so often happens.
Okay, so now that you said that, does that happen to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can think back when early in my career, I got married to Gail with high hopes of raising a family and having great relationship with her and kids that were obedient, kind, brave, clean, and reverent.
Don't mind me as I'm laughing right there, but I don't know what you were smoking, but let me tell you.
And then I found myself when we had about three kids and I was trying to make a living and provide for this growing family that, you know, I needed that next promotion because I needed more money to pay for the family. And I found myself working more hours. And I literally, at one point in my career, was going into the office at 5 in the morning and coming out at the office probably 7 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow.
And that was a time when the kids were going to bed at 7 or 7:30. Mm-hmm. So there were nights when I wouldn't even see the kids. And, you know, it's not the life I had hoped for and certainly not the life I signed up for.
And you probably didn't. You know, we kind of get in that mode of doing what needs to be done, and we don't always stop long enough to see what's happening until we're so far off course that there's some fixing that we need to do.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a case where, thankfully, Gail kind of called me to my senses and just said, look, this is unsustainable. We cannot continue to do this because I feel like I'm a single mom raising these kids where you're off working. And she was always very grateful, but she said, I appreciate all that you're doing, but I don't care. And she said this to me on more than one occasion. She said, I don't care if we're living out of a refrigerator box under a bridge somewhere, but if I've got a nice house and all this stuff and I don't have you, then we've missed the boat.
Hmm.
And it was just like,
oh,
you're totally right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'd have to make a course correction. And I'd like to say that was a one-time thing. You know, it was like the smelling salts. I woke up from this dream and it was all happily ever
came
after.
Came to your senses and everything's been good ever since, right?
But that's been a cycle for me and for us, you know.
Okay, so let me push on that a little bit. So a cycle, have you dealt with this in the last year?
Yes, I have. I've dealt with it in the last month.
Oh, wow. Good.
Yeah.
That's good. I have to tell you, that's good to hear because there are times where, you know, well, and we all do this, right? We see people on the outside and it all seems to be going so effortlessly and perfectly. And we know our own story and how we seem to feel like we're doing well for a week or two. And then just about the time we have it figured out or think we have it figured out, we bomb again and we find ourselves off course one more time.
Well, and honestly, at the place I am in my life, I think it's even more difficult. It's kind of a surprising thing to me because I don't have the excuse or the need to be home to be with the kids because the kids are all grown and gone. And so now it's just the two of us. And so it's easy for me to just kind of go home like a fuel stop, eat, and then go right back into work. And it's a little bit better now that I have my office out of my home, because when I left Thomas Nelson, I had my office in my home, and then there were no boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then it was easy just to work 24/7. But then I got an office away from the house, only three blocks away, but I don't go back to the office at night. So it's a little bit easier to have a clean break and keep it a clean break, but it's still a struggle. I mean, I think I'm just by nature, I'm super creative. And I think this is the entrepreneur's life, maybe the leader's life in general, but there are always these unfinished projects. You know, you finish
there's
a project.
There's always something to do.
Oh, you think
always
of all this other stuff you got to get done. And so I always feel like, I chronically feel like I'm behind, you know, that I'm not delivering the projects on the timetable I thought I was going to deliver it on, because guess what? Things take longer than you think. When was the last time you finished a project and said, well, that didn't take as long as I thought it would? Like, never?
Yeah. haven't said that ever.
I mean, I never say that. I chronically underestimate how long things take. And Greg McKeown says in his book, Essentialism, he says that you ought to add 50% to every time estimate you make on how long things will take, because that's just like the buffer factor. If you do that, you'll create enough margin. But things typically take, on average, 1.5 times what you think they will. And he says, even he talks about this survey in the book where some people were surveyed and they said, are you usually late on most of your projects? And they say, yeah. They say, well, are you going to be late on the current project you're working on? Oh, no. But then they are. It's like we got this wicked kind of denial.
I'm only laughing because I resemble it. That's all. So back to this idea of kind of this finding ourselves in positions we didn't anticipate, and how it happens to all of us. We're very glad to hear that this happens to you, even in the last month. And we end up off course. So, you know, there's always something to be done. Actually, you know, I was thinking as you were talking about Andy Stanley talks about cheating, and we end up cheating the things that we shouldn't cheat.
Right.
Right. When we get off course, we end up cheating the things that really matter in order to accomplish the things that don't matter quite so much.
Yeah.
So how your position is that when we get off course, that there is a solution, or I guess a solution to keep us from getting off course quite so often. In fact, you use the term drift. Actually, just recently you spoke at the World Domination Summit, and this was kind of the heart of your message. They kind of presented you as the person who was going to talk about what really matters. And your goal was to help the audience know how to prevent this idea of drift. So take a minute and just talk about drift, and then provide us with a solution for keeping on course.
Yeah. So this really started out in an experience I had when Gail and I had been married. I think it was about 8 or 9 years. And we decided that we were going to go on a vacation and we were going to really blow it out. I mean, normally the vacations we would take up until that point would have been driving vacations where we go a couple hours a week. But this time we saved all of our pennies, all of our nickels, all of our miles, and we decided we were going to go to Hawaii. And so we went to Maui, and we got there pretty much broke. In fact, this is kind of embarrassing. I've never admitted it, but when I got there to rent the car, my credit card was declined because I had it maxed out, you know, and fortunately I was able to
talk about drift. That's a little bit of,
oh, it was, you know, it was embarrassing. But anyway, so we worked through that, but we didn't have any money after we got there. So we decided, okay, what can you do in Maui? This beautiful location, but what can we do that doesn't cost much? We found out that the hotel was giving snorkeling lessons in the swimming pool. So we went out, we took snorkeling lessons. Then they took us out to the reef. Absolutely blew us away. It was so beautiful seeing all these amazing fish. It was like swimming in a giant aquarium, the coral, all of that. And we said, okay, we found it. And we had about $30, which was about what it would take for us to rent some snorkeling gear for the week. So we did that, and we got some snorkeling gear. So the next morning, we went to this lagoon that was adjacent to the hotel, and we were the first people there. It was about 6 o'clock in the morning. There wasn't a wave. I mean, it was just like pristine glass, gorgeous. So we got into the water with our snorkeling gear, now really experienced, having been through snorkeling classes in the swimming pool. And we decided to paddle around.
Snorkeling classes in a swimming pool.
I know.
Was it teaming with sea life as well?
No. But so we got out into the lagoon, and again, we were mesmerized by what we saw. Totally caught up in that moment. And just the beauty of it was astonishing. Mm. What inadvertently happened was that we got distracted by all that. We weren't paying attention to the fact that we had got caught in a riptide. And we got pulled way out to sea. I don't know how far it was. I didn't have any way to measure it. All I know is that when I finally pulled my head out of the water and looked back at the shoreline where our hotel was, It seemed like it wasn't, but it seemed like it was miles away. You know, the hotel was just very small, far in the distance. And so I called to Gail. She pulled her head up. She looked. She gasped. She said, what are we going to do? And fortunately, we had this boogie board that we'd brought to use for putting shells on and so forth. And so we just grabbed onto that thing, and we kicked for all we were worth. Mm-hmm. And it took us about 45 minutes to get back to shore. We didn't even know you're not supposed to swim against a riptide. I mean, we were just trying to get to the shore. And so we swam as hard as we could. We pulled ourselves up on the shore and collapsed. And we've only been snorkeling one time since, and that was after about 20 years. So it was a really harrowing, scary experience, but I just realized that's how most people's lives are.
Uh-huh.
You know, they just, they don't intend to drift out to sea or to miss the destination that they're pursuing, but they get caught just in all the things of life. They get distracted by all the stuff that's around them. They get caught in a riptide because there is a cultural drift. There's a current. And you get caught in that and you get pulled far, far away of where you intended to go. And to me, that's become a metaphor for kind of the great evil or the great, the opposition that we all face to intentionality. And that's just to drift through life aimlessly without a plan.
And the hard lesson of all of that is the longer we allow ourselves to drift, the more work it is to get back. It is so much easier to drift. In fact, you can drift without effort. It just kind of happens.
Yeah.
But to get back on course, on track, takes significant effort. And like you said, you guys just had to kick and kick and kick for the longest time to get back to where you were.
Well, and you think about some of the ways that people drift. I mean, just to your point, in their health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just let it go for years. They don't exercise. They don't. Well, in fact, here's another story I'll tell myself. For years, I didn't floss. You know, I was raised that if you brushed your teeth once or twice a day, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like dentists.
Oh,
still don't.
Sorry
like them.
To all the dentists out there. I'm not a huge fan, even though I believe in what you do.
For other people.
Our apologies to the dentist. Go to the dentist.
I have a great dentist now. And of course, the technology's come so far. And I don't know why I had this sort of primal fear of dentistry, mm-hmm. but I did.
We're not alone in that. There's a lot.
I think there's a lot of us. And so so Gail kept getting on me. She said, you really need to floss. I mean, you're going to incrementally end up with a big problem. And so by the time I went to the dentist, it was a big problem. Uh-huh. So then just to get, you know, my gums were bleeding and to get back up to, you know, healthy gums took a lot of work, mm-hmm. took a lot of effort, a lot of visits to the dentist. But that's just an example of how we can drift and how it's more work when we do. And it could be in any area of our life. People drift in their marriage. They drift in their career. And the
relationship with your kids.
Relationship with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it could be anything. Anything
finances.
Important.
Finances. I mean, yeah, we could keep going and
here's
going.
Here's what is crucial, though, is you don't usually drift to a destination that you would have consciously chosen.
No.
That never
Wouldn't
happens.
That be nice if that worked out? I'm going to drift to success.
Yeah. I'm going to drift to a great marriage.
Uh-huh.
Or perfect health.
Or fabulous kids. Or, yeah. Or wonderful finances or whatever it may be. It doesn't happen that. I mean, drift always takes us away from where
we
want to be.
Drift by definition is moving with the current. So it's by definition, you're moving in the direction of least resistance.
Mm.
And so to move in the opposite direction takes effort.
Okay, so let's get practical. So you're saying that if we take action now to make the most of the life that we have, that there are, I guess, well, you have them as questions. That's how you presented it at World Domination Summit, that there's really questions that we need to be asking right now that is more proactive rather than reactive. So rather than find ourselves in a bad place and have to kick to get back to where we're going, that if we take the time to invest right here, kind of like the flossing, to ask ourselves these three questions, it can keep us more on track.
Yeah, and I really believe in the power of questions. We've talked about questions on this episode several times, or on this podcast several times. But the most powerful questions we ask are not of other people, although those are powerful, but the questions we ask of ourselves. And so these are three questions that I presented at World Domination Summit and my new book, which tentatively is titled The Life Plan Manifesto. It's organized around these three questions. But these are three questions that for me give me the clarity I need to kick against the drift and become once again intentional in whatever area I've been drifting.
Now, before we launch into those questions, for those of you that are listening in, it's really important that you take the time to actually, these can't be flippant questions. I mean, these are questions where you want to sit down with a notebook or whatever means, maybe you type it up digitally or whatever it may be. But this is something that you need to invest some time with. These aren't easy questions to answer, and they're going to require some thought, but they're worth it because it keeps you on track with your life. Okay, so let's go right into the questions. And these are questions that you say we must ask if we're going to avoid drift and live with intention.
Yeah, so the first question is, how do you want to be remembered? And this is the question that connects you with the ultimate end game of everything, which is your entire life. And Dr. Stephen Covey, if he taught us anything, it was begin with the end in mind. You know, it's one of the habits of highly successful people. And this is kind of the ultimate application of that habit, which is to ask, how do I want to be remembered? And, you know, I've realized, I've attended a lot of funerals, unfortunately, by this age of my life. And I realize that there's always that conversation that happens after the funeral where people are sitting around with their photographs or their mementos, and they're talking about the person who's just passed. And you realize that all they have at that moment is the memories. Mm-hmm. And if that person has invested well in those family members or those business partners or whatever, then it's usually a time of rejoicing and a time of sharing great memories and what that person meant to you. But it can be, the silence can be kind of deafening when there aren't those memories. Mm. And I remember the first funeral I ever went to was for a man who was kind of notorious in this very small community, didn't have any friends, had made a lot of enemies. And there was a funeral that a few people showed up to, and there was no discussion afterwards. I mean, people came to the funeral and then they left. You know, there was no discussion. But the way to combat that is to ask yourself to realize, to own the fact that you have agency in that moment. You are going to die. That's a fact. And it's an inconvenient truth, maybe the ultimate inconvenient truth that our society tries to keep us from facing. You know, we have thousands of distractions that keep us from facing our own mortality. I love what Steve Jobs said. And he said this in a lecture that he gave, a commencement address that he gave at Stanford University. And he said, almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you're going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You're already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. Now, he had a different application that I'm making here, but just the idea of remembering your death, realizing that you have agency, and saying, how can I begin now to shape the memories that people are going to have when I pass? What investments do I need to make today in my family, in my business, in my community, so that those conversations are something I would be pleased with if I were around to enjoy them?
So your impact is a finite resource. I mean, that's the simple, it's going to end at some important time. And so ask yourself, how do I want to be remembered?
There are no do-overs.
No.
You know, you're going to get through this life.
You've
got this one precious life that you've been given.
And there's no guarantee that you're going to have that life till 85 or 90.
No, that's right.
And we tend to think really optimistically about that. But it doesn't take much time to read the newspaper, watch the news, or even talk to your neighbors and friends to realize that that is not the case for many, many people.
Well, and you kind of get into this place where you think that, again, once I get through this, whatever I'm going through, then I'll give attention to that. You know, I don't really have time to invest in my kids now, but if I can just get through, you know, the next few months, this new job, then I'll invest in them. And those weeks turn into months and the months turn into years. And before long, you've spent an entire life and it's gone by and you haven't saved, you haven't invested in your marriage, and it all blows up.
Mm-hmm.
And people
it's
wonder
true.
Why they've gotten to the end of their life and they don't have their marriage or they don't have their kids or they don't have their health. And this, the astonishing thing to me, Michelle, is that people will spend more time planning a 2-week vacation or a wedding than they will thinking through their life and where it's all going.
Absolutely true. I think just having dealt with some health issues myself, some life and death health issues myself, you know, this kind of question is something that hit me smack in the head. I was 39 years old when I realized that my life may not last too long. And thankfully, I'm thriving here and doing really well. But, you know, my biggest regret was that I hadn't asked these questions earlier.
Why did
it take a crisis? Why did I have to go through this to actually face and wrestle with those questions? And that it wasn't just worth it to wrestle with that for my family and my kids, it was worth it to honor my own life, to make peace with my own life and to feel good about the gift that I had been given. And so that first question is powerful, and it's worth the time to sit down and to think through it.
It is. And it may seem a little morbid, and I would just encourage people, look, it's a reality.
I think it's stewardship.
I do too.
I mean, it's not more, yes, it's morbid, but no, it's really not. I mean, it's just, like you said, it's reality. So it's really a stewardship kind of issue.
And it's delusional to think that it's not going to happen.
True.
That's the true escape from reality, to think that, I'm going to live forever. I don't have to think about this. There's plenty of time to deal with it later. The only thing you know for sure is you have today.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, and it's almost cliche, but beyond that, it's a gift if it happens, but what you have is today. What are you going to affect today? Where are you going to make a difference?
First question, I want to be remembered? What is the second question that every leader must ask themselves?
What is important to me? And this is the question of priorities. So if the first question is a question about stewardship, this is the question about priorities.
Okay, what is important to me? Now, explain that to me.
Well, I think most people know what's important to their spouse, what's important to their parents, what's important to their boss, what's maybe important to their kids. But for most of us, we haven't answered the question, what's important to me? And by that, I mean, do you have a set of priorities that you operate out of, that you own, or do you have a set of priorities that have been handed down to you? For example, your boss, his implied priority scheme for your life is that work comes first. He didn't care about your community involvement, mm-hmm. probably doesn't care about your church involvement. He might give lip service to it, doesn't maybe even care about your family.
Mm-hmm.
Enlightened bosses will, but let's be honest, a lot of them don't. Mm-hmm. They're there to get a job done, and they care about your commitment to the work.
Been there.
Mm-hmm. And so if you don't look out for yourself, if you don't establish your own priorities, on what basis are you going to ever say no? Or on what basis can you say yes to the more important things unless you have clear-cut priorities?
Okay, so how have you worked this out in your life, this particular question? What is important to you? Just really make it practical.
Yeah, well, so, if you take all the different categories of life, and Daniel Harkavy and I in our book, The Life Plan Manifesto, we talk about these as life accounts. And it's like a bank account. Sometimes there's a positive balance. Sometimes, you're withdrawing about as much as you're depositing. Sometimes it's gone negative. And so you have to look at all your different life accounts as a series of accounts. And so what we encourage people to do is first identify the accounts and then arrange them in priority order. So for me, and this just is me, my worldview and everything else, God is first.
Okay.
And so what that practically means is that this is how it fleshes itself out in my life, is that when I would love to sleep in on Sunday morning, or when I would like to read the newspaper on Sunday morning, or go golfing, which sounds terrific, I choose to go to church. Not because I was raised that way, because frankly, I wasn't raised that way. Not because the culture around me expects it. They do expect it. But I can choose. And mm-hmm. I choose that, and I own that because
it's
I want to
play. It's a priority account.
It's a priority account.
Okay, give me the order. What would be the next priority account?
The next one, which is surprising to a lot of people, is me. So self comes second. Now here's my
explain that.
Rationale. My rationale is that it's like when you go on a flight. You flew down here from Denver to record this episode. And so the first thing that the flight attendant said was, in the event of unexpected air turbulence, a loss in cabin pressure, oxygen masks will fall out of the sky or out of the ceiling.
You sound like someone who's flown before.
I know. And so they say, and what do they say? They say, before you attempt to help somebody else, make sure that the oxygen mask is firmly affixed to your own face.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because if you pass out, you're not going to be of any use to anybody. So the most important thing you can do for the sake of others is take care of yourself.
And that's your health and your
everything.
Mental health, physical health, emotional health,
spiritual health,
yep.
All of that. Because if you don't, you're not going to be useful to anybody. And so the one of the lies of our culture, I think, is that if we're really altruistic, if we're really, especially this happens to Christians a lot, I should put myself last. And the problem is that ultimately when those people have to take care of you because you have a mental breakdown or you're no longer psychologically or intellectually interesting or you're psychologically bankrupt, mm-hmm. then somebody else has to come take care of you. It's not altruistic at all. It's extremely selfish.
Mm.
And so I think appropriate self-care, not narcissism, but appropriate level of self-care is really important. And the way that fleshes itself out for me is the first thing I do in the morning, I tend to my spiritual life. So that's when I pray. That's when I journal. It's when I read the Bible. It's when I meditate. Then I go exercise because I want to be in the best health I can be in, because I want to be the kind of person who is in good enough health that I can take care of other people and I'm not the one needing the care. And, you know, who can predict what's going to happen? But
absolutely,
I want to take the best care I can of myself.
And so I assume then after those two accounts, God's self, then your wife and your children,
yep,
your job
absolutely.
Are very important accounts as
they
well,
are.
But you just have them prioritized so that you know how you're operating.
Yeah. And life isn't always that, you know, artificial and, you know, that's kind of a construct that we're imposing on reality, but it does give me guidance so
yes.
that if I get asked to do something and if it's a choice between, you know, going to one of my kids' soccer games or taking that extra work assignment, you know, it's clear. My family mm-hmm. takes precedent over that.
All right, so let's move on to, we've gone through the first two questions. How do I want to be remembered? What is important to me? And again, these questions should take time. These shouldn't be questions that you can jot on a napkin really, really quick. I mean, that can be a start, but it's more yep. of a process that we want to unpack. What is that third question?
The third question is, what single brave decision will I make today?
Say that again one more time.
What single brave decision will I make today? Because life, once you get clarity about where you want your life to go, there's two things that you need. One is courage, and you also need commitment. I mean, we started this episode with that. You mm-hmm. know, we're here to give you the clarity, the courage, and the commitment you mm-hmm. need to succeed in life. And most of us have to make some brave decision every day. You know, and it may be as simple as having that difficult conversation that we've been putting off.
Mm-hmm.
It may be more consequential, like those few times when we have to have a really big conversation, a really hard conversation with somebody. But for our life to move forward, for us to go to the next level, we've got to risk what we have and kind of put it out there. And so to me, this is like the thing that we have to do on a regular basis if we want to keep moving forward and make our lives count and have the impact that we dream about.
So it's just truly acting on what you've just talked about.
Yes.
Making some kind of active. So it goes from being just head knowledge and thinking about, oh, wouldn't that be nice, to actually implementing that, acting on it.
Yeah.
In a small step. You know, we don't have to change the whole world today.
We don't.
We don't have to conquer it all today. But I love that you call it a single brave decision that you will make today.
Well, and let me just give you two examples. I'll give you one that was big and one that was not so big.
Okay.
So a big one that happened when I was at Thomas Nelson and we were in the throes of the recession. And unfortunately, our company, we had too much debt on the company that the new owners had put on the company. And so we were just over-leveraged is what the bankers would call it. But we had more debt than we needed to have. And so what the attorneys were saying, what all the consultants were saying, is that we needed to go through Chapter 11 and get rid of all that debt on the balance sheet so that we could clean it up and move forward. And I just knew that if we did that, it was going to have unbelievable repercussions in the author community. And I didn't think we needed to do it. I thought that there were other alternatives. We had a lot of creative people.
Mm-hmm.
The company was generating positive cash flow. It's just that we weren't meeting our debt covenants, which is kind of an abstract thing on paper. Didn't have a lot to do with how well the company was performing. And so I remember talking with a consultant friend of mine who said, she said, what's your greatest fear right now? And I said, my fear is that if I challenge this, because I'll be challenging the owners, I'll be fired.
And that's a pretty legitimate fear.
Yeah. And I had a nice job. And so she said...
and you had the pressure of family and
pressure
responsibility.
Of family
and again, it's all these,
yeah.
like you talked about earlier, riptide drift, intense
all
pressure
that, yeah.
is all there.
So she said, well, okay. And this was the advice she gave me. She said, okay, if that's a possibility, she said, I would cause it rather than let it happen to you. She said, you should do the right thing for yourself and for the company especially. And if you do that, let the chips fall where they may, but at least be the cause of it and not just, you know, receive that as a victim.
That's great advice.
It was great advice.
I mean, that's also rare advice. Not many people would have had the kind of foresight or the wisdom to say that.
Well, and that's a kind of thing that as a consultant, if you give that advice to somebody and your client gets nuked, you know, you kind of feel responsible.
You're like, bummer.
But,
kind of my fault.
So I went into a meeting. I still remember this meeting where, you know, we had a ton of lawyers on the phone from New York. All my team was gathered in Nashville and we're having this conversation about whether it was no-go or go on Chapter 11. And I said on the conference call, I said, we're not going to do this. And I said, at least not if I'm going to be the CEO. And I said, I'm just drawing a line in the sand. And I said, I'm not trying to be belligerent. I'm not trying to be adversarial. I'm just saying, I think this is the wrong thing for the company. And I am not going to lead the company in this. And for me, that was the single brave decision I had to make that day.
And that's, I mean, that's big.
It was big.
Were you like sick for a few hours before the meeting?
I was totally sick. I mean, my hands, literally my hands right now are cold and sweaty.
Just thinking about that.
Just thinking about it. I was terrified. I called Gail before I went into that meeting and I said, honey, I just want you to pray for me because I think this could be, you know, the end of my career, but I've got to do this. And she said, I totally stand with you. I don't care what happens. This is the right thing to do. Go do it. So I walked in there and when I did it with my voice shaking and all that, here was the amazing thing about it. It was so built up in my mind. Everybody on the call said, oh, okay. And I mean, it was like, okay, let's figure it out. Let's go. Okay, there's some other alternatives. And so everybody got real creative. We came up with another alternative. And it was like a 15-second discussion.
Okay, that is so, it doesn't always work out that way, but that's so great that you followed what you knew was right and what was brave. But I kind of, you know, you sit there and you kind of want to slap them a little bit for making an intense situation, like, all right.
But that's how it is with most of the things that require our courage.
Yes.
And it really brings home to me an important thing that's always important to remember as a leader, and that is just because you have fear doesn't mean you can't act with courage. Courage isn't the absence of fear. Mm-hmm. It's despite feeling like you want to throw up and your hands are cold and sweaty, you still do the next right thing. That's courage, regardless of how you feel.
In hindsight, after, you know, the meeting went okay and this team was so supportive and you guys all came together and actually came up with great solutions that you wouldn't have come up with without forcing and pushing through that. In hindsight, what could have been at stake if you would not have done the brave thing?
Well, the whole company. I mean, honestly.
I mean, that's big stakes.
It was huge stakes. And my only regret is that I didn't speak up sooner because I could have done it sooner and saved myself some sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. And a lot of pointless behavior. You know, I mean, we went through a lot of exercises, kind of running scenarios and all that that would have had to happen that took weeks of time.
We're running out of time here, but I do want to come back to this. You said there was one example that wasn't quite so big. So not of all of our big, brave decisions, like you're saying, to make one single brave decision today. Not all of them are going to be that big. So give me an example of something that would be smaller.
Well, I think sometimes it's just speaking up and giving voice to those that don't have voice. And I think of another situation where I was managing a department and one of our authors said some really ugly things to one of our designers. And this was a weight loss book that we were creating and she had created the cover for it. And he didn't think that she did it in the right way. And he said to her, and I can't believe he said this to her, but he said to her, he said, I'll bet you're overweight. Like, what did that have to do with anything? Because she didn't want to put somebody on the cover, and he did. And the point of fact, she wasn't overweight, but it crushed her. So she came into my office in tears. And I realized for the sake of my team, I had to enter into a difficult conversation with this author. And honestly, I was furious. And I called him on the phone. You know, I excused her. I said, I'm sorry this happened, and let me see what I can do. And so I called him, and I said, look, I said, as fate would have it, I haven't signed your contract. And I've got it here on my desk. And I said, unless you call her and apologize, and I said, listen to me carefully. I want you to send a dozen red roses to her tomorrow with an apology. And if she doesn't believe it, we're not gonna go through with this contract. I said, you can't alienate my team and then expect to win in the marketplace. And I'm just not gonna enter into this relationship. And he did it. Now, I have to confess, I kind of coerced him, and the relationship still ended up blowing up. But again, I can only be responsible for what I have to do.
And the point is that your employee, your team member needed you to stand up
totally.
And have the tough conversation. Regardless of how you carried that out, you needed to advocate for her. And it wasn't easy. I mean, even though you were furious, I mean, those kind of conversations are never easy.
No.
They're tough to have, but what's at stake is worth the pain of pushing
through.
Totally.
And the integrity of my team was at stake because that was a story that meant the world to her. It meant the world to my team. And it kind of drew a line in the sand of, you know, who am I ultimately for? Who has priority in my organization? I can tell you right now, my employees come first, even more than my customers. Because my theory is if I take care of my employees, they'll take care of the customers.
Absolutely.
The customers will take care of the shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you got to start.
I mean, it's really, you know, not to be cliche, but it's the killing two birds with one stone. You take care of your customers first and all of it gets taken care of.
Your employees first
and all gets taken care of as well. One last little practical question. How often do we need to revisit these questions? This is a one-time fits all, you know, kind of does it forever kind of thing? Or how often do you come back and answer these three must-ask questions?
Well, I've got this framed out in a life plan. So this is basically the framework of my own personal life plan. So I revisit it once a year. The last time I did it was in February of this year. We're recording this in June. And so it happens once a year.
Great. For those of you who have been with us today, again, we've been talking about the three questions every leader and world changer must answer. We're not talking about just asking yourself these questions, but you must take them as far as actually answering them. It's going to require a little time. It's worth the time. You don't want to get yourself caught in a drift that takes you someplace you don't want to be.
Right.
And so if you want to counteract this natural drift that happens to all of us all the time and kind of stay on course, not get off track, then asking yourself these three key questions is going to be a critical part of that process. And those questions one more time are, how do I want to be remembered? What is important to me? And what single brave decision will I make today? If you've enjoyed today's episode of This Is Your Life, please head on over to iTunes where you can both share and rate the program. This is very important for all of us so that we can get this content in as many hands as possible. It only takes a second. In addition, if you have a question that we did not address today or maybe another question not related to this podcast, you can head to Michael's website at michaelhyatt.com/question. And there you can leave either a voicemail or an email. We do read and listen to those questions. They are important to us. And at some point, we include a lot of those questions that come in right here on the program. So you could kind of, in a sense, be sitting at the table with us, which is fun. We love that. Well, we're wrapped with another episode. Do you have any final thoughts on this idea of kind of the work that we need to do in order to change the world?
Yeah, I think ultimately you've got to decide, Michelle, what kind of person you are. You're going to be a person that's going to swim against the current, or you're going to be a person that's caught in the drift. And the people that swim against the current are leaders. And that's, to me, the essence, the essential definition of a leader is somebody that just doesn't flow with the drift, but swims against it.
There's no neutral ground. You're moving one way or the other.
That's right.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you for being with us today. It's been our privilege to share this time with you. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I talk about the 7 strategies you need to build your email list.